Welcome to The Trust Show. I'm Lottie Edwards, and I'm joined today by Charlotte Young, co-manager of Troy Asset Management's All Weather Personal Assets Trust. So great to have you here, Charlotte. To start with, could you just sum up for me, in a nutshell, the trust philosophy?
Yeah, thanks. And thanks for having me. So the philosophy is really two things, protect first and then grow. So we want to be that part of someone's portfolio that they can rely on, that they don't wake up at night worrying about, but also over time, protect at least in line with inflation and then also grow. And I think it's really important that we get the balancing act right between those two things.
You typically have low equity exposure. That's been creeping up this year. Could you take me through where you've been finding opportunities and what's driven that slight shift?
Yeah, so it has increased. We started the year with about 30%, just under 30% in equities. And even before Liberation Day, so-called Liberation Day, we were finding bottom-up opportunities. So whilst the markets obviously continued to rise, whether you look at the US or the UK, but particularly in the US, it's had a really strong 3 years. Beneath the surface, there are loads of companies and sectors that are out of favour, which is quite an exciting time to be a stock picker, particularly for us, because actually really high quality businesses, a lot of them are out of favour right now. Some for very good reason, and we don't want to touch them, but others we think have kind of got caught up with events. And actually, long term, they look really attractive still and much more lowly valued. So we started adding, for example, we started a holding in Canadian National, the railroad company, before Liberation Day. We came into April still with just over 30% in equities. And then the market fell a lot, as you know, when the tariffs were announced. And from sort of peak to trough, it was nearly a 20% drawdown. We were adding quite aggressively on that week. So Monday, the 7th of April, was the day that we added 5 percentage points to equities. So quite a lot in one go. And essentially over the next few weeks, we took it up to over 40%. And a range of, so to answer your question, a range of opportunities. I mentioned one stock. We've also added to healthcare. We own the Alcon, the eyewear. So they make contact lenses. They also make equipment and consumables for cataract surgeries. So it's they're an ophthalmology business. So again, very different, very defensive, out of favour. And equally out of favour 7-8 months ago was Alphabet. And we added to Alphabet during that week. Things have changed quite a bit. And the shares have more than doubled. We're now taking profits from Alphabet. But yeah, bottom up stock picking, it's been quite an interesting year for opportunity.
So you mentioned Alphabet. So in terms of those big US AI-driven tech names that you hold, you said you've been taking some profits. Was that on valuation concerns to join in on this big AI bubble debate?
Yeah, so when we were adding back in April, we had a holding. We've had a holding since 2019. We added at the end of last year at around $175. In April, it got down to $145, and that was 15 times earnings for a business that was growing its revenue in the low teens, growing its earnings in the mid-teens, and had just huge potential. We kind of think about it as positive optionality. So it's just very, very well invested in lots of things that can go right, including AI. So they bought DeepMind in 2014. They are AI pioneers. We know that already, but there was this narrative that they were the AI loser. Understandably, the search business is changing. So they needed to integrate AI properly into that. OpenAI looked to have stolen a march. Actually, it turns out that they're very well invested. They invest $50 billion a year in R&D. Surprise, surprise, they have now. We discovered lots of advantages, including chips. They're now a hardware play on AI. And the reason we've been reducing is that valuation has gone from 15 times to, with the shares now, just under $320. So more than doubling in 8 months, which is, doesn't normally happen so quickly with defensive companies, which we see as very resilient. They're nearly 30 times earnings. So for us, it's just reducing that risk. It was our largest holding. We've just brought it back, but still very positive on that long-term trajectory. I mean, if you think about it back to basics, Google is a repeat purchase, very sort of everyday item. It's obviously growing with the internet and e-commerce. But if you think about the use of Google search, that is going to be, we think, very resilient. And they have the distribution. And now they have not only YouTube, but also a cloud business of size. So sort of a robust and broad business versus what it used to be.
And moving away from equities, because that's half of what you hold, let's talk about gold. How does your current position sit relative to previous years? And I guess similar to my last question with AI, when gold is on a tear like it has been this year, as a defensive trust which puts protection first, when do you start to get concerned?
So on gold, we have 12% in the fund and in the trust. The most important thing to say is that we have been taking a lot of profit out in order not to run up that holding. So we had 12% also 2 years ago. And had we done nothing, it would be well over 20% by now. For us, the big driver of the gold price, particularly up until this year, so sort of starting in 2022, has been central bank buying. So the Russian invasion of Ukraine happens in February of 22. They had $300 billion of their foreign exchange reserves frozen. And it became very clear to emerging market central banks, in particular around the world, that their dollar assets were potentially less safe than they had been in the past. So we just saw this huge step up in terms of emerging market, but general central bank purchasing of gold, reallocating away from the dollar, diversifying away. And we think that that has legs to continue. All the data suggests that that buying is ongoing. And historically, when central banks start buying, they tend to continue. It tends to be sort of multi-year buying patterns and trends. So we do think this is quite well underpinned. We still got well over 50% of central bank reserves are in dollars today. So there's a lot that still needs to be reallocated away. Where else does it go? We think gold is the only real alternative.
And in terms of the bonds that you hold, both US and UK, could you explain why you favour inflation-linked? And in relation to that, do you anticipated rate cuts, the Fed expected to make announcements imminently,
yes,
look good for the portfolio?
Yes. So we favour index-linked for two reasons. We've been concerned that inflation is likely to be here to stay for a while. We were concerned about that during COVID when there actually was a deflationary impetus. I think the very long-term underpinning of that is that you've got more fiscal spending. So if you go into a crisis in 08, you have quantitative easing. In COVID, you had, yes, that same monetary easing, but also transferring money into people's bank accounts for them to spend. And you know that the US consumer, when they get that check, they go and spend it. And we found out in 21 and 22 that that's very inflationary. I think that playbook is now pretty permanent. You also have wage inflation ahead of inflation, which is interesting. We haven't had that for a long time. And again, that just means the consumer is quite healthy and it's spending. And I don't think the consumer is going to put up with wages not going up anymore. You've had, you know, you have a lot of inequality and the power is sort of more to the people. So we think structurally that's a thing. Inflation's still at 3% and the Fed are easing. So what's their target now? Is it 3? Not explicitly, but I think, again, slightly more permissive on inflation, which will also help with the debt level. I don't think it's a coincidence. So in terms of what the Fed does tonight, I mean, I think it's sort of quite well flagged. They're going to cut. Is that good for the portfolio? I think it's in the price. But in terms of our index-linked bonds, we don't think inflation's in the price. So if you look at it, we've got around 2 year duration and around that mark, the break even rate. So the rate at which your index linked gives you the same return as a nominal bond, conventional bond, is just over 2%. So the market does believe that inflation is coming down. And actually, we think it'll be stickier and higher.
And something a bit more unusual I saw in your fact sheet was Japanese government bonds. What prompted that investment?
Yes. So we own 10% of the trust now in Japanese government bonds. We really are doing it for the yen exposure. So they are less than 2 years duration. So very low exposure and risk to interest rates. We think that the yen in a time of crisis is likely to continue to be a safe haven. So it's always had that consistent track record of essentially risk assets sell off. The yen does well because there's a massive carry trade. So a lot of people borrow in yen, put it into European bonds, or that's a particular favourite, or just equities more generally. The mechanistic reality is that that estimated to be about $500 billion worth of yen that is part of this carry trade. When people want to sell risk assets, they then repatriate those borrowings back into yen, and that causes the yen to appreciate. So in the financial crisis, actually from market peak to trough, so 07 to sort of March 09, the yen appreciated over 80% versus sterling. Clearly, COVID was a shorter sell-off. The yen appreciated 15%. You saw it again in April. And we think that dynamic will continue. Part of our mandate, we mentioned capital preservation, part of our mandate is also to minimise the drawdown. We see that as really an important part of preserving, because people ultimately will quite often need that cash when a crisis hits. So if the equity market's down 50 and we're down 35, that's not a result. We will go down likely, but we want to go down a lot less than the market. So we're looking for these assets. Gold is another one which behave really differently to stocks, and where we think actually that can provide a really helpful diversification.
And a bit more of a speculative question for you. I was wondering if crypto was a space you've ever considered. Maybe now's not the time to be asking, but I know Ruffer, another defensive trust, took up Bitcoin a few years back, so that's why I was asking.
It's a great question. So for us, there were a few things. We think the volatility is probably the first sort of hurdle and probably a deal breaker in and of itself, in that Bitcoin's had drawdowns of 99%. Again, I'm talking to this reducing volatility in the portfolio. That's just not the type of return profile that's appropriate for our investors. I'm sure it's appropriate for others. In terms of other attributes of Bitcoin, is it a real currency? I think there is a question of, what's it the answer to? What is Bitcoin solving for that we don't have already? I'm not totally clear. I can see that it's maybe an alternative to gold. Is it really a store of value over time? It's only been around since 2009. So my trust and confidence that it will be is relatively low on that basis. There is also the question mark over, okay, who else is kind of in there with you? Gold, it's got that reputation. It's held by central banks widely. Bitcoin does not have that same credibility. We always look about who's on the shareholder register with us. If we're owning a company, okay, are there other similar investors or investors that we respect that also own these shares? We don't need that. It's not a prerequisite, but it's interesting. And it's quite important as to who you're alongside. With Bitcoin, you are alongside a few nefarious actors. So it's worth bearing that in mind. And a lot of speculative retail investors who are going to just sell if they get nervous. So not for us.
And it would be nice also to get your perspective on a broader industry issue. Your board has an active buyback policy, which, along with good performance, means shares and personal assets are trading on a rare premium. Levels of buybacks have been breaking records already this year before the year's over. But we've also been hearing a bit of pushback from managers recently, particularly of less liquid trusts, saying they stunt growth and they're not actually in long-term shareholders' interests. Where do you stand on that?
In terms of the buybacks stunt the growth of the trust overall, and therefore the scalability, I think the most compelling thing is that it reduces your volatility. So again, if you are a forced seller, let's just say you're a private investor, recession hits, you also have lost your job. You need to access your most reliable, safest part of your portfolio, which perhaps is personal assets. Let's say, and go for COVID, you know, the market was down a third. We were down, at worst, 9%. Imagine if at that moment of the market's trough, you also had slapped onto that a 10% discount that had just widened. Okay, you have to take a 20% hit on your funds. And we want people to be agnostic, almost agnostic, as to when they sell, when they buy. So we don't want to penalise them on the way out. We also don't want to penalise them on the way in. So if we have a massive premium, we're going to be issuing shares to alleviate that premium, because that, again, we don't think is right for the end investor. So I think it is in the long-term interest. And I would also just say, you know, when personal assets was taken on, it was by Troy, it was around a tenth of the size of what it is now. So it hasn't stymied the growth in the long term. But we have, as you say, had periods where we have had to buy back. And I think that's part of the deal. You issue when times are good and people, there's more demand than supply, but you also have to buy back.
And just to end with, I'd love to hear a little bit more about this charity GAIN, which I believe stands for Gaza Investors, that you're part of.
Thank you. So GAIN is a charity that a few of us co-founded in 2019, really with the view that we have a problem, a few problems, but one of the big diversity problems that we face in our industry is, I think it's around 10% overall, but depending on which sector you look at, slightly more, slightly less, 10% of senior decision makers in asset management are female. And we have a pipeline issue whereby the majority of applicants to the industry are also not female. So about 20% of applicants for graduate roles are female. And there's also a drop off. So we looked and is anyone doing anything to actually address the pipeline issue? The answer was no. No one on a nationwide basis was trying to address that gender diversity at a pipeline of talent. So we sort of set out and asked lots of students. We did a big survey, students and sixth formers, okay, do you want to be an investor? And if not, why? And most of them said no. And the why was interesting because a lot of them didn't actually know much about investing. So there was an information gap, which was quite exciting. Okay, well, we'll just tell them about it. And then the other thing was a sort of role model thing whereby they had a stereotype in mind that perhaps needed to do an economics degree and possibly look like a character from Wolf of Wall Street, which we try and assure them that is not true to reality. So now the model is that, yeah, GAIN has a big internship program, well over 100 internships every summer by our partner firms, trying to then, I think over 60% of those every year now in the last 3 years have been hired. So we're getting to that end goal of hiring more women. But our first job is to inform and inspire them to think about it. So go to schools, go out to universities. And I must say, I'm on the board now. I was a co-founder, but I'm very much not involved in the day-to-day. We have a fantastic team led up by a woman called Tanya Tracy, who are just executing incredible work now.
Well, that seems like a good positive note to end on. Thank you for joining us, Charlotte.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.